It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
They're looking for a point guard who's logged a lot of games in the NBA, who is going to run an offense that they trust when Jalen Brunson's on the bench and or if he gets hurt.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man, hope you're having a great day. We certainly are. It's going to be a great week. Falcons, Vikings, Sunday night right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Today's an off day, but it's not an off day at the branch when you talk about kicking. And as I said today on social media, and we invite you to follow us at Mike Bell, ATL, and I'm at Put 'em Up, see Dukes, and follow this radio station at 929 The Game and this radio show at Dukes and Bell 929. Y'all don't understand. I want a full roster of kickers and options at Flowery Branch. We can have a Hunger Game style competition, and let's figure this out. Because, Mike, they sign a kicker today, which is where we start. But, guys, it doesn't necessarily mean, and I want to be clear about this, that doesn't mean that Koo's not kicking Sunday night. The new guy is on the practice squad. But, Mike, do you feel like this is going to be a real competition?
Well, I mean, it's certainly a guy who's played and started in the NFL, which is different than what we got with Lenny Krieg, who's, you know, sort of a novelty act. And I said that with all due respect. It was more of a public relations thing because it's the international, you know, hoopla about, you know, bringing players over and developing, which, again, if he was real competition, he'd be battling right now for this job. They wouldn't have to call a young man who grew up in PTC, Parker Romo, who was 11 of 12 on field goals last season for the Vikings.
That's right.
So he does have professional experience. As Mark Ramondi points, that doesn't mean that Koo's lost his job, but they brought him in to at least light a fire.
Well, I hope it does, but I don't know if we're too late. I don't know if we're past that already.
Meaning, the summer was the time.
Correct. Meaning now we're in season. The games count. And you are going to rely on a guy that, frankly, right now, I just don't trust. That's where I'm at. You may feel differently. But the fact that they've addressed it and we're going to attempt to at least put some more pressure on him and maybe have a guy in the building, Mike, if you need him and so be it, you got to go to him, you can do that. But there are other guys that are out there, and I know 49er fans are like, Dukes, you do not want this guy. You do not want Moody.
Right.
You don't want those issues. Bottom line, guys, for me is sometimes people need a change of scenery. We've seen this time and time with kickers, Mike, and I'm not making excuses, but sometimes guys get in a situation, things are going south, they change teams, they change scenery, and things get better for them. So
right. It
just depends.
Matt Prater, back in the day, you know, he struggled here in Atlanta. It's funny because you said it. Sometimes guys it's like golfers with the yips and missing those 5-foot putts. He was with us in 07. Remember that day? That was your way to bring in Morton Anderson for like short distance kicks? I mean, that's how crazy it got. Mort was like 45. The joke was, you know, what about kickoffs? I just run off the field. I'm not kidding. Are you kidding? But and then eventually he was with the Dolphins, and then he went to the Broncos, and he went back to being a Pro Bowler. And he was hitting like 62-yard kicks and such. So Prater's the guy that hit the game winner for the Bills. They just signed him on Friday because they lost their kicker. Bass went out with an injury. Moody, you just mentioned, kicker for the 49ers, just got cut. Missing, you know, easy. I mean, we're talking chip shots. So they nearly lost that game to Seattle. They weren't messing around.
No, and they feel like, and this is how we should feel. This is why this is a little bit frustrating. We'll be at Flyer Branch tomorrow talking with Raheem Morris, and certainly our player guest, Divine Diablo, is going to join the show tomorrow. He had a really good week one. I know many of you may not be as familiar with him. He spent the last, you know, 3 or 4 years or whatever with the Raiders. Guy played great. He was all over the field. But, Mike, the thing is, you cannot go into these games knowing these one possession games are going to be a part of your season,
right,
these one score games, and not trust your kicker. So it's something that's got to get resolved. Now, what about the health of our team? Because we talked with Dave Archer, analyst for Atlanta Falcons, earlier in the show. It's online at Odyssey.com. He said something very interesting, didn't he?
Yeah, we were asking him about, you know, what's up with our wide receivers. And I said, you know, because without Mooney, maybe Mooney goes, maybe he doesn't. Drake, you know, comes out of a game and he's tough as nails, man. We talked about his dedication. Arch is of the opinion, this is just his, because the first injury announcement will be tomorrow. That's the first report that comes out. And then later in the week, Dave Archer is of the opinion, his opinion, these guys are both going to play. He said he'd be very shocked if they're not out there.
Well.
And that's something.
That is something. Because
changes, your point, changes a lot about how you feel about this game.
Well, here's the deal. I don't even know if they'll reveal what happened exactly with Drake because it hasn't been. All we know is he got injured. He left the game. Maybe it was nothing. When I say nothing, not to the degree that's going to keep him out of multiple games or multiple weeks. But either way, Darnell Mooney, man, he's on the mend, and we've been saying we need him back, we need him back, we need him back. They toyed with us last week because they kept saying, well, he'll be available. And I said to you, available doesn't mean he plays. And then ultimately Sunday hit, and boom, he was not playing. But if they have Drake and Darnell Mooney back, Mike, we're going to open up this offense and allow Michael Penix to do Michael Penix things. This is what makes this offense go. You cannot do that, no disrespect, to the other guys that are out there filling the void. You're just not as familiar. He's not as familiar. And I don't know if the trust level is there. So we need those guys against this very good Vikings defense we're going to see on Sunday.
You know, we talked to Arch, and I said, Arch, we got, you know, these new pieces. We're all excited about James Pierce Jr., getting Jalen Walker out there, Leonard Floyd. And two of those three didn't even show up on the stat sheet. I mean, nothing. You know what I mean? We did get some touch. There were some touches and a couple of tackles for Jalen Walker. I read something D-Led posted from some fantasy football nerd or PFF nerd.
Nerd!
James Pierce Jr. had a higher win percentage than Mike Green, Abdul Carter, and Mikel Williams.
Yes, and I posted that last night too.
What does that mean?
You know what? That's a good question. Because here's the deal. For football savants and people who are into the only the metrics of how a guy plays his position.
Like Chris Collinsworth.
You look at this and you go, well, his win rate, meaning he was beating his guy, but more importantly, he was in position to make plays, and he did that better than the other guys you named. All right. The other side of that, though, Mike, is you could easily say, hey, he had no impact at all. What you're saying in that metric, okay, right, and whether you buy it, I'm not talking about you, but just anybody, right, is that he was actually doing things in the game that allowed him to be in position to make plays. You got to rely on your teammates, but can you do the job? And so what he's saying and what the numbers are saying is when you look at his rate, his win rate, he was in position a lot. The tackles don't show that and the sacks don't show that. The problem with the average fan, the folks that are listening to us right now, whether you're in your car, smart speaker, right, however you're accessing the show, you're going Dukes and Bell. We only got one sack, and it was none of our edge guys.
Right.
How can I say that he had a high win rate? That's the problem with this stuff, and this is the new age of football, just like the new age of baseball, with velocity rate and all this stuff, right, that we talk about. These are the things that a lot of teams look at and go, man, our guy's winning, but is he finishing?
And that's what I was asking Arch, and Dave explained it quite well, that look, everything Carl just talked about, these guys affected Baker Mayfield, but unfortunately when the game was on the line, he went right down the field on us. We didn't affect the quarterback when the game was on the line. We did keep them way below their offensive norm output, certainly less points and less yards than what they did against us in the two games we won last year. And I respect and I understand where Arch is coming from. But at the end of the day,
so let me ask you,
this is the same Smitty argument. Like, sacks don't matter. I mean, if you get Baker Mayfield on the ground in the final minute of the game, maybe we have another, you know what happened. They went down there, Ku missed a field goal, but they took the lead. That's the problem. We didn't do the job when it mattered.
What was the big argument you got into with baseball fans this year? What was the
about exit velocity? I don't give a crap about exit velocity. If a home run is 112 miles an hour, 99 miles an hour, to clear the fence.
Okay. And the argument for you was, whether you believe in all this stuff or not, right, I watch a guy and I can see he can play and he can hit. Right.
I think they're trying to squeeze the square peg in the round hole with this football analytics. Baseball, because the sample size in baseball, Carl, is so much larger with 162 games and 500 at bats. I don't think you can apply it to the NFL, especially not knowing if it was a double team. What were you asked to do on the specific play for an edge rusher?
Well, and that's part of this, but they're keeping track of all of those things now. The things that we used to not keep track of, they are keeping track of all of those things. The play call, the double team, the responsibility, and then you put it into the damn computer, and we know this. AI now spits it out and goes, oh, he had a win rate of 680 million.
Right.
And you kind of go, well, what does that mean? I only bring that up, Mike, to say this is a route that we're going. When I have this conversation all the time. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We talk about quarterback rating, right? Like, for example, our guy, Michael Penix, had, I think, a 91 or 94 quarterback rating on Sunday, and it's really good. But what does that mean, right? When you say, okay, well, Russell Wilson had a 50-something quarterback rating for the Giants, and you start looking at the metrics of what makes that up, bottom line is, if you watch the game, you saw Penix play really well, and Russell Wilson sucked. He didn't play well. That's the right metric, right, for most fans. I saw a guy complete passes and not give it to the other team, and I saw another guy who didn't do that.
I mean, two things, as we say, can be true. It's not these absolutes. Arch brought up a great point. You know, last year, they were averaging over 400 yards. We held them to 260 yards. That's great. Problem was, when the game was on the line, our new defense couldn't get the quarterback on the ground and stop their scoring drive that won the game.
All right, coming up, what we learn about the Vikings as we turn the page and start talking about Sunday night. It's going to be here before you know it. But before we do that, we've got questions because Alex Anthopoulos spoke to the media yesterday. Braves beat the Cubs 4-1, but there were a lot of things said about this team moving forward. Grant joins us next.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on The Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we talk to Grant McCauley, Mike and I were having some going back and forth about the Falcons that we just want to lay out for you, because we were talking about who played well and moving into week two. And you were telling me up front you like some things, but what were you just saying about?
Yeah, I thought, you know, Zach, we're just talking about, you know, how the guys look, because Archer was saying, look, they really shut down the offense. Unfortunately, our offense, you know, couldn't do as much as it needed to do after that amazing first drive. Rukaroro, I thought he got kind of swallowed up at times at Onyemata. I'll try to find the PFF numbers on what their success rate was. But I like Zach Harrison earlier in the game. I don't know if he was out in the rotation, but remember, you know, you could see him making plays, number 96.
He was present, no doubt.
At least in the first half, to my mind.
Yeah.
Again, we just did the numbers. We're looking at it. I know it's difficult sometimes shoehorn the analytics into football, but you did everything but basically stopped the Bucs on the final drive. Can you do it against Minnesota? Because certainly we saw the Bears at times get all over Drew Dahlman, by the way. The Vikings are getting after Drew Dahlman at center for the Bears last night.
Well, yeah, look, that revamped Bears line, and we'll talk more about it because we learned some things last night about the Vikings that we can take into week two on a Sunday Night Football. We'll tell you more about that in less than 10 minutes. Grant is here. Grant, yesterday, Alex Anthopoulos spoke about a variety of things. I want to start with his thoughts on Sean Murphy. What did you make of this when he talked about, you know, they knew Murphy said the hip finally bothered him enough that he needs to get this procedure done, but it's bothered him for 3 years. We didn't know. Did you know? Did anybody know?
No, that was a surprise. And even heard from Brian Snitker before the game today. He said when he got a call yesterday morning that this was the severity of this injury, he was as surprised as anyone, because Sean Murphy, I think over time, and I think it's important to kind of look at what the injury is now and maybe what it was 3 years ago or last year or the year before last. I think it's gotten progressively worse. And a catcher, that's a different variety of tough player, because you basically sign up to get punished for 162 games if that's what it calls for. Typically, as we've talked about a lot, you don't want to put a catcher through that many reps, but whatever you're doing back there, you're taking more physical abuse than any other position. So I feel like from this, and we haven't gotten to talk to Sean Murphy, who will undergo his season-ending procedure on Thursday in Nashville, that he may have just felt like, hey, this is just a kind of a chronic thing that I'm dealing with for a number of years, and then it got worse somehow. And the doctors were, I think, amazed that he was able to play through this issue. And Brian Snitker said today, I mean, he was popping up and throwing as well as anybody in the league. You wouldn't be able to really tell until he finally basically got to that point where it was like, look, I've started getting treatment a couple of weeks ago specifically for this, and I was going to ask for an MRI, but I want to finish the season. And the Braves basically said, look, there's nothing to be gained by you going out there for three more weeks. Let's go ahead and get the imaging now. And it revealed that Sean Murphy is one tough dude, is probably the shortest way to put it. But yeah, he went through a lot for 3 years. Now we can unpack what that means and what the ramifications were for a variety of different reasons, but that's kind of where it falls with Sean Murphy, and a very, very, I think, surprising announcement, at least as far as the severity of this injury is concerned.
And Grant, not to be a bigger conspiracy theorist, but with, I mean, a player sometimes, you know, hey, here's a guy who's with Oakland, now he's in the Braves, a much better organization, you know, better chance for your career. I mean, is there any chance that there was a pre-existing condition that they missed?
No, I don't think so. I mean, this is a question we'll have to kind of ask and delve into, and I don't know that we ever get an answer that goes that deep and you know, would validate that question. Is it worth asking? Yeah, I mean, it absolutely is, because you start hearing, oh, well, he felt this in the offseason of 2022. What happened? Oh, he got traded to the Braves in the offseason of 2022. But he has said that it was something that kind of came and went in terms of it bothering him really, I think, at all. So I don't think that this was, hey, my hip is torn up 3 years ago and I'm just going to somehow magically Superman my way through that for 3 years. I mean, there's limits to the human body, and I don't think he would have been able to catch if it were this bad for that long. And if you look at Sean Murphy's arrival in Atlanta, I mean, that first half in 2023 was the best stretch of his entire career. He started the All-Star game. So I don't think it was at that point at that time, but over the last couple of seasons, I think, and this year in particular, it has gotten worse.
Yeah, I said to Mike, he had a good July. August was good until it wasn't, and it started bothering him. But I don't know if fans are paying as much attention because of where we are in the standings. But I agree with you. I just hope he's going to be ready for spring training. Let me ask you about Snit and his future, because Alex addressed that in a very broad comment, saying he's going to be a Brave for life. Well, we know that. Does that mean he's back? And Alex kind of said, well, look, we'll address this in the offseason. Do you feel like there's been any conversations whatsoever in regard to Snit?
I think that there have to have been different conversations to different levels. But in terms of a decision-making conversation, I don't believe that that's happened yet. So there's a lot in that, obviously, because, you know, some of the questions that were asked to Alex was, well, have you kind of started thinking about the background? He's never publicly going to come out and say, yeah, we've been preparing for life after Snit so we can be ready to, you know, hit the ground running before the body's even cold, as, you know, some of these transactions go. And this is not a case of, hey, a manager didn't meet expectations and we're going to fire him and move on to somebody else. This is a highly appreciated and decorated member of an organization for 49 years. So it is unorthodox, would probably be the best way I could describe it. But something worth noting and worth thinking about is, after the Cubs are done here, the Houston Astros come in and Brian Snitker's son Troy is on that coaching staff. It'll be interesting to kind of see, and this is something that Snit alluded to in one of those Apple TV broadcasts that everybody hates and don't necessarily watch and catch every minute of it. But he did say, like, we need to get the family together and have some conversations. And the only way to get Troy involved in that is to have him in town. So this could be kind of a jumping off point for letting us know what the final couple of weeks of the season is going to look like. Snit is not a me first guy. Right. He wasn't looking for a farewell tour of all 30 cities where they give him, you know, gifts and all these other things. I mean, this is not like when Chipper Jones announced his retirement. He very much, I think, wants to keep it close to the vest and wants to go about his business. And I think we'll get the answer to our question sooner than later. But for a lot of people, the suspense has certainly played out in a way that has them continuing to ask the questions.
Right. Remember, I think San Diego gave Chipper a surfboard on that farewell tour.
Yeah, I'm sure he's used that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I would think guys would just give Snit like Walmart gift cards. It is Grant McCauley with us, guys, talking about it. Because, yeah, I mean, just hypothetically, Grant, you might want to raid somebody. First off, do you feel the organization would go outside the organization if they do go for a successor to Snit?
I think it needs to be a conversation. You need to have a full-on, you know, search put together. You don't need to hire a third-party firm. I think they're capable of doing it. Thank you. Do they have somebody in-house in Walt Weiss that is going to be a conversation, an interview when Snit's time and tenure is over? I think so. But that doesn't mean that he's necessarily the odds-on favorite to get that job. I feel like, I mean, Skip Schumacher is certainly a name that's been thrown around. David Ross has ties to the Braves organization and managerial experience. A lot of people have talked about Mark DeRosa. I don't necessarily see that one as being quite a fit, but if we're playing the game, and I forget what show it was. Is it Always Sunny where the guy has all of the pictures and string together on the wall and he's smoking the cigarette and looking at it and trying to connect everything? I don't think we've reached that point in this search yet, but they're going to talk to some different people, I think, and, you know, broaden their horizons as they need to decide who the best person is to lead this organization in the future when it's time to make that change.
Grant McCauley joining us here on Dukes and Bell. More conversation coming up about the Falcons and certainly what we learned from the Vikings game last night with the Bears and what we saw from a quarterback that everybody keeps saying is going to get better, and I don't know if he is. Grant, let me ask you about Drake Baldwin. Rookie of the year, hands down, yes?
I think that he's the odds-on favorite for me. We are going to see this kid, Cade Horton, pitching for the Cubs again tonight. He was good against the Braves last time out. He's getting the Braves again. Well, being familiar with him, help Atlanta out because Horton's been on a nice 9, I believe, start run it is. But I look at the overall value, and then I look at the context of what Drake Baldwin has done, playing catcher, a demanding position from opening day on. Clearly the Murphy story is part of this now because, hey, look, the Braves had an all-star Gold Glove catcher that Drake Baldwin had to come in and replace. And he's done a terrific job of, you know, carrying that load as a young player in his first taste of the big leagues. If you want to look at the overall, you know, counting stats, he's way up there among rookies. If you look at the wins above replacement, he has Cade Horton by, I believe, a full win. And if you look at different modalities of that, maybe more. But either way, this is an extremely valuable player playing a demanding position in his first taste of the big leagues and doing it at a very high level. I think it's Drake Baldwin. That's a long answer. That could have been a short answer, but that's right. The reasons why, or those are the reasons why I think it's Drake Baldwin.
More Falcons talk coming up. And one thing we did learn is it gets us an extra first-round pick. That's the idea. The motivation is to keep you from holding guys like they held back Acuna and getting your young stars out there sooner.
Yeah, and they've done a lot of adjustments to that, I think. In the rookie of the year, motivation is part of that as well. I think that in general, the service time manipulation, clearly the players' union hates it, so they've looked to find ways to mitigate it. But, yeah, whether it was Ronald Acuna Jr. or Chris Bryant, I mean, that was a whole debacle for the Cubs prior to winning the World Series. But I think we're seeing less and less and less of that. But you can't blame a club for thinking, all right, well, if we wait 3 weeks, we get an extra year of a player. Most teams, if they're acting responsibly on their side of it, are going to find ways to hold on to their valuable assets, and these young players clearly are.
When are you on this weekend?
I will be on this weekend, Saturday at noon, and so we'll have 1 hour of From the Diamond. Obviously, we're wrapping things up for the baseball season for the Braves, and college football and the NFL are in full swing, so I've got some other things on my plate for the weekend, but I do have some very good stuff that I've been able to pick up this week. I had a long conversation with Austin Riley about his injury, about his hitting adjustments that he wants to make this winter, and how he's going to be feeling heading into spring training. I've also caught up with Michael Harris to get a little bit more on his interactions with Chipper Jones and how that may have unlocked some things in his swing. And we'll unpack all of the things Alex Anthopoulos had to say this week as well. So that's From the Diamond at noon on Saturday right here on 92.9 The Game.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot. Hey, man, Grant, great job. We'll talk to you soon and see what we do against the Cubs tonight. Appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks as always, guys. Take care.
All right. We've got more conversation, guys, because J.J. McCarthy is the guy we're going to face on Sunday.
Did you feel like at one point, man, I felt real confident about the game on Sunday night, and then all of a sudden I didn't feel as confident because of the way that game ended last night?
Well, as I asked somebody today, was J.J. McCarthy the guy we saw for three quarters or the guy you saw in the fourth quarter?
Right.
We'll come back and discuss next.
It's Boomer and Geo, mornings on The Fan, 101.9 FM.
They're looking for a point guard who's logged a lot of games in the NBA, who is going to run an offense that they trust when Jalen Brunson's on the bench and or if he gets hurt.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last night, J.J. McCarthy looked like hot garbage for three quarters. It's Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. What can we expect Sunday night? He was 7 for 12 with 56 yards and a pick six. Then the fourth quarter came, and he had three touchdown drives. One he took in from himself after scrambling and then running into the end zone. They beat the Bears, Mike. And before we focus on J.J. McCarthy and the Vikings, Caleb Williams, you talked about him earlier in the show.
Right.
And guys, we're getting a sense of, now all the teams have played in the NFL. Week one's down, and it's over. But there were some really good performances, including our guy, Michael Penix. He did not get the win. His team didn't get the win. But you can't deny that the kid showed you a lot of promise.
Without run game, too, without really having a balanced attack.
No doubt.
Knowing that the pocket was rarely clean. Our guy was making throws, as Arch said. Dave Archer joined us earlier. Rewind to 320 on the Odyssey app. But a lot of those throws under duress.
Well, and so McCarthy last night, he gets the run game going. They get it going in the second half. Kevin O'Connell's their head coach. They run for a buck 20. We ran for 69 yards total. So there's the difference when you talk about making your quarterback a lot more comfortable. But Caleb Williams, Mike, what's your thought on him?
I'm reading some of the breakdowns from Chicago papers online and just from NFL analysts. There were some good and some bad and some ugly. I thought that, and Arch brought up, there was one where, Michael Penix may have missed a couple of throws. He was sailing the ball earlier. But I thought when the game got on the line, Michael Penix dialed it in and got better as the pressure mounted. I thought, we've seen it now in two big games, at the start of the season, and of course what we saw against the Commanders, where this guy is really good in the two-minute drill. Two-minute drill is really hard for some young quarterbacks to master. He's got it, because he's told us he's played in these games before when it mattered most. So I like that. Caleb Williams is not even close to where Penix is, and he had a full year. Now, granted, he's had to go through now two coordinators, and Ben Johnson has been giving him some tougher love. He also had to, deal with some nonsensical report we talked about yesterday that said, the guy's got a learning disability, which is totally erroneous. So, there's a lot of hate for the guy, which I think is unfair, But he's got to start to show like he belongs in the NFL. And I didn't take a definitive from that last night. I said good and bad.
Yeah, he played all season last year, and you just felt like, at least I did, watching the reaction of Ben Johnson, he knows these play calls. So he knows who should be open and how this should look. And as they showed him on the sidelines last night, it was like Ben's going in it with his eyes. Damn. Like he missed it.
He was there.
Right.
I was a bit, didn't see it.
And, right. And I felt like Caleb was not hitting guys in stride. And Mike, you know me. Pull!
Right.
If guys open, man, you got to let it go. And I just felt like he was hesitant with that. The first quarter, it looked like it was on point because it was scripted. He knew exactly where he should go. It was there. And you're going, oh, wow, he's 6 for 6 or whatever he was to start the game. Game went on. I felt like he got more and more tight. Meanwhile, the Vikings are a good team.
3 touchdowns, Carl, in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, look, they were a good team without J.J. McCarthy. They were a good team with Sam Darnold. They were a good team with Kirk Cousins. They're a good team because they're well-coached. And they may have the best defensive coordinator in the league in Brian Flores. And Kevin O'Connell is a quarterback whisperer. So I'm not surprised that J.J. turned it on, but he was hot garbage last night. And I feel like our guy is better overall, Mike, with his arm talent and all of that. But at the end of the day, we're going to get a chance to see up close and personal J.J. McCarthy on Sunday night. And one of the things the Bears did, they got that pick six, Mike, because they blitzed him. They put him under duress in the first three quick quarters, and it worked. But for some reason, either they went away from it or guys fell asleep, and all of a sudden you gave him all that confidence and he won the game.
We talked about how much our team just rallies behind Michael Penix Jr. This is before we had a little scrum with the Titans in preseason. You saw it last night if you stayed up or you saw it on SportsCenter this morning. They give him the game ball. Justin Jefferson's doing a post game. I'm talking about number 9, and they're talking about McCarthy because, you know, they get it. I mean, this is his first start in the NFL. And, yeah, you said it. You know, he took a shot to the body, but he rallied back. And he had drives of all three drives over 50 yards to get them those touchdowns. So better team, better balance, better weapons. And I think just still scratching the surface with Justin Jefferson because there was more opportunities that he missed, which you'll look at the film. I just don't like the fact that a guy who could have left Chicago with a loss and more questions than answers now comes out. McCarthy's confident. Team feels he's our guy. Now it's home opener, Sunday night football. The friggin' horn, all that crap in Minnesota.
Yep.
So hopefully we'll get after it. No, that's War of the Worlds.
Yeah,
that's War of the World. They play that at Patriots games.
I don't want to hear that damn horn because that means we're doing our job. When you hear that horn go off, you know they're running it up.
But here's the thing. We got to get pass rush, and we started the 5 o'clock hour talking about we didn't get home. And then there were stats out there. You brought it up yesterday that, you know, if you look at the win rate from James Pierce Jr., better than Mykal Williams, better than Mike Green with the Ravens, but we still didn't get the quarterback on the ground. We held the Buccaneers to 140 yards less than last year's average, Carl, on offense. But, you know, to me, it's like, okay. Then we said, and you and I looked at this earlier, the interior of the line. Maurice Clark, who listens to us, says, you know, without stout enough in the interior, he goes, the best defenses get great interior line play.
Yeah.
Did we get the push? I thought Rook got swallowed up a lot when he was in the rotation.
And
that helps those guys that we're talking about on the edge.
Like, what's curious for me as I look at the Vikings, and we got all week to break it down, and we will, and Friday we'll give you our final thoughts on this heading into Sunday Night Football. And here's the cool thing. I really do hope Darnell and Drake can play because Sunday Night Football is spotlight. And for a lot of people who watched us play the Commanders last year, this is their next opportunity to say, hey, what's this Michael Penix kid about? If he doesn't have his weapons out there, it may look different. And so I'm hoping that they're able to play. But the curious thing to me, Mike, is I brought this up Monday when we were talking about the Falcons losing the game to the Bucs. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Statistically, if you buy in all this, we should have won the game. We had the ball more. We had more first downs. All the things that matter, right? Time of possession. The Bears did the same thing last night, but it came down to 3 drives and 3 moments.
Right.
And so when you look at the Bears game last night, they lose 27-24, but the Bears had more yards. They had more plays. They ran 63 plays to 49 for the Vikings.
Because the Vikings like 3 and out so much in the first like half and first three quarters.
So what's the old adage? If I run more plays than you, Mike, that gives me more chances to score. I'm more likely I'm going to win the game. Not the case. Same thing played out with us. More passing yards. I mean, this is the thing. The Bears guys had 12 penalties for 127 yards. They shot themselves in the foot. That's why you lose football games. And the point I'm getting to is, statistically, if I showed you the Falcons and Bucks, you go, man, look how good we look. We lost the game. Why? And so those are the things we got to figure out, Mike, whether it's field goal kicking or other moments that guys have to make plays to get these wins, and especially on the road on a Sunday night.
I saw some breakdowns about the quarterbacks around the league. Some on SI.com, other websites. Needless to say, Josh Allen came in at one. You could have Justin Herbert at two, Geno. Michael Penix Jr. is top five. He's top four in yards.
Quarterbacks.
Again, he should have had two touchdowns. Drake, unfortunately, couldn't handle that second touchdown, but he runs for that one. I mean, that's elite. That's what you're looking for. Guys, he's only started four games in the league. We just broke down. You know, here's a guy, Caleb Williams, who's had a full season under his belt. And Michael Penix Jr. now, hopefully, as you said, Sunday Night Football on display. But gosh, I sure hope Mooney's there. Even Drake, you know, at 75%. But one thing I think Zach Robinson, and we'll ask Coach about this tomorrow. We'll be at the branch. Divine Diablo is going to be our player guest. And Wes Durham is going to join us later in the show, is get Kyle Pitts involved, because he was open so much of the time earlier. And I think, and Mike wants to, you know, pump him up. If you can get Pitts involved early in this game, and Bijan does what it is, but you said it, against Minnesota and Brian Flores' blitz package, we've got to establish the run.
Well, I think
you can't establish the run. Yeah. It's going to be a long night.
No doubt. Pitt, and I think Pitts will be open a lot simply because that underneath stuff's going to be there. And let me give Kyle some credit. Did y'all see how he was running after the catch on Sunday? This is what I've been saying about
ferocity.
Being a beast. I'm not only going to catch the ball. I'm going to get yak after that. I catch this, and you're not going to give me – I'm just not taking the 5 or 6 yards. I'm about to get 10. He ran with a purpose after he caught the ball, Mike, and that was impressive. But I also think, Mike, we said it all summer. He's comfortable. Like, you saw that. I hope you guys saw it, and I'm with you on this. On Sunday night, I think a lot of the underneath stuff's going to be there, and Kyle could ultimately have a big night. It may not be big chunks. But right. It may be the, you know, the 10, the 7, the 8-yard, move the chains kind of deal, sort of like what we saw in this game. But remember, he caught 7 of the 8 balls thrown to him. I thought he had a really good game, man, considering the first game of the season and everybody's saying, is he going to show up?
I think there's only one play where I think Arch brought up, you know, looking from the booth, it looked like he maybe the route was, he didn't see it through. But, hey, we're looking for this guy to be a big factor. You said it last year to be a big factor. With Mooney, you know, and certainly with Drake not close to being 100%, this is a chance where he can really take the pressure off. And it was almost like once Drake was out, he was the guy that was a big force in what should have been a game-tying drive.
He really was. Hey, man, it's been a very fun show today. And by the way, any of the interviews that you might have missed, go online, subscribe to Dukes and Bell. Don't miss any of our content. It's that easy. You'll get alerted, and you'll get a chance to hear all the great stuff. But today, a great interview with Connor Riley talking about the Dogs, and we're going to continue to chop this up all week. If you're wondering, Dogs were like a 6-7 point favorite. That number's come down about 3.5 on the road against Tennessee. First SEC game for the Dogs when you talk about the real test. But Connor had some interesting news notes about where the Dogs are, even from a health standpoint, going into this game. And we got a chance earlier in the show, as we mentioned, to talk with the Georgia Tech beat writer, Chad Bishop. And, Mike, we talk about big games, and we'll be talking about this as well. Big game for Georgia Tech this weekend against Clemson.
Man, you and I were talking about this earlier. You just wish it was going to be under the lights. You know, it's going to be, you know, Saturday night with the skyline in the background. I said it at 2 o'clock. Tech fans, this is it, man. You got to really bring the noise. Let's get bananas. It's hard sometimes to get it up for a noon game. But let's hope that the rambling rut. I'm just talking about energy, Dave. Again, second time you guys.
Struggle. I was just surprised.
Well, when you say somebody's earning a lot of money with their mouth, Mike, I'm going to look twice.
And I was just
doing
surprised.
Accents.
I was just surprised that you said it was tough to get it up for a nooner.
Well, you know, granted, the average tech. Well, Day-Day.
For a nooner. Day-Day. Really?
Well, again, Day-Day. For those of you married guys who get that, to you I say mazel tov. For the average tech fan, and again, I no longer want to make the joke, the average tech fan is 65 to dead. Those guys do have a hard time getting it up for a nooner. Hopefully they will on Saturday against Clemson, because Klubnik has looked pretty meh, you know, if we're honest, the first couple of games.
Nooner? Let's get out of here and clear our throat.
Hi-oh.
We built this program in God's name, image, and likeness.
I hear you.
All right, Dabo. By the way, there are some guys right now going, nooner, what's that? I don't even know what a nooner is.
Check with your doctor. See if a nooner is right for you.
Yeah, or ask her. Tomorrow, Flowery Branch. What, Orin? It's the truth. If you don't ask, you don't receive. Right. Flowery Branch tomorrow. We'll be there. 2 o'clock. Make sure you're there. Turtle is back tonight. He's got the night show starting at 6 o'clock. Big O, great job. Day-Day, our executive producer. Thank you guys for being here and listening as always. Mike Bell, clear your throat.
Hey, man. We talked about it with Connor Riley earlier. I mean, we like Gunnar Stockton. Want to believe in Gunnar Stockton. Hopefully, you'll be elite coming up on Saturday. But, you know, a guy's got 61 touchdowns on the other side of the field. That's Joey Aguiar. That's a lot of touchdowns, Carl, from his time at App State.
It's a lot of touchdowns.
Five this year. And you could argue by any metric he would be the better quarterback going into it. But has Georgia been sandbagging? What can you make of these first two games? I don't know. I don't know. They don't look great. Tennessee's look better. I mean, we said it's nine. It's actually eight in a row. They're going for nine in a row against Tennessee. I think it's going to be a real dogfight, pardon the pun. Fowler, by the way, and Herbstreit are going to do the afternoon call on Big ABC.
All right. Jalen Carter fined today, guys. NFL came down. They fined him $57,222. Why? Don't ask me about the $222. Basically $60,000 for spitting on Dak Prescott. He will not be suspended another game because he missed that game. Hmm. So the NFL said, we would have suspended you an addition, but you already missed one. Bottom line is, don't spit on anybody. Huh. It's not worth it. Hope the lesson was learned, not only for Jalen Carter, but for kids watching and people who play and are around the game. No place in the game for it ever. Hey, if you love the show,
tell your friend.
If you don't,
spend some time looking at making money with your mouth.
Man, come on. I had a rough night, and I hate the f***ing Eagles, man.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on The Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we've essentially fired the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.